All right, you're back in the DFSR here with a NFL podcast for Thursday, September 6th, the first day of football. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to get you started and keep winning on FanDuel and DraftKings. We have a special going up right now. You can get our DFSR Pro package for 7 days for free. So that'll carry you from today all the way through the first week of games.
Dude, you're reading your email right now? I had no idea you knew about the 7 day free offer.
Actually, I got to be honest with you. The only reason I didn't know about it is because of the email. Because it popped into my Gmail this morning. So I was like, oh, okay, I can make a note to that. So 7 days for free. That's going to include optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB. We have premium content going up. I have an article going up later today with some sneaky sort of run. I mean, it's hard to be sneaky at this point because with NFL and all the information that's out there, but I would say what I believe to be under-owned running backs with pretty high upside this week, considering all the news. And we have stacks going up. So anyway, all covered under one subscription package. I'm stumbling because I'm so excited. Subscription package, dfsr.com/NFL. We'll get you started. Head over there right now. Free trial for 7 days. All right, buddy. Week one cash game plays. You and I are both having pretty good mornings, I would say. So I'm feeling very good. I would say I'm having business related good vibes. I'm having life related good vibes. I'm feeling good. You can hear it in my voice. It's week one Thursday. The Eagles and the Falcons play tonight. I wrote a cash game article, which we're going to talk about and break down a little bit here. But I want to just start with Le'Veon Bell. The big news comes out yesterday that Bell. Everyone sort of assumed that he would report to camp. He did not report to camp. It really seems at this point like the assumptions were made. Some things on kind of stuff he had said, like, and tweeted about. And then also just on, it's just what happened last year. Like, he held out for all camp because he wanted to get paid. He didn't get paid. He showed up on Wednesday for the first practice, played against the Browns, sucked, but still was there. And This just didn't happen yesterday. He didn't show up Wednesday. The team, I'm going to be a little bit long-winded, and I'm going to get your response here. But the team basically started throwing him under the bus immediately, like the offensive line guys, like Pouncey and whatnot, just instantly said they were unhappy with it. So bad vibe there. I can't imagine that's the thing that gets him to report, right? Like if the team is just starting to trash you in the locker room day one.
The reason he's doing this is because he feels like he's not being treated fairly, right?
Yeah, by the organization, so, not by his teammates. Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, by the organization, my long story short is that it's not going to make it more likely for him to be like, oh, never mind. Now you guys are being, like, huge jerks about it. Why don't I do you some favors and give you a break?
Yeah, exactly. So we're left here. I did not write him up because I just made a head nod to it just when it happened, but I mean, where do we put James Conner at this point? Let's assume Bell doesn't play. And I think even if he were to report today, I really just don't even think he would play. Like, he hasn't practiced. If he reported today, he would maybe get a practice in and then one on Friday, walk through on Saturday, and that would be it. And I really think even if he came around, he wouldn't take the field. James Conner, I mean, is this just like a must-play in cash? Like, let's say Bell doesn't show up. He's $5,000 on DraftKings, I believe. I'll look at the prices real quick. But does he become just a complete must-play based on the situation? And then where do we kind of slot his ownership if Bell doesn't take the field?
Well, his ownership will be extremely high. I think it's not that there are never known risks when it comes to playing guys like this. First of all, you have the matchup. You know, Cleveland was one of these enigmatic matchups last season where you kind of, like, the buzz was that they were this much improved rushing defense. We looked at it several times throughout the season, pointing out that they basically didn't really play against a lot of real running backs, but then they did have some decent performances against real running backs. The big thing is, it's not a definitively amazing matchup the same way it was 2 years ago. Still somewhat of a question mark for me. The next thing is, whenever you're bringing in a guy, if you haven't seen it yet, there's always the risk that it's a running back by committee, or they just err on the side of the pass, or that they only use him as a two-down back, or he's only the third-down back. You know, like, there's just a lot that can potentially go wrong there. So it's not that he won't be a highly owned player and a great play in general. I'm just saying that it's not without risk right now.
My thing with him is, I think he, for cash, basically, because of the price and the opportunity, would become a must-play. I think we saw this in terms of scheme with the Steelers last season, that when Bell was not on the field, D'Angelo Williams like was just kind of fine, you know, or was that 2 years ago? I forget the timeline now. But when Bell doesn't play, they can slot in a pass catching running back. Connor is definitely a pass catching running back. He caught a bunch of balls in the preseason. They did use him in the passing game. They really don't have anything behind him. They have like Jalen Samuels, I think, who was like sort of like
he's listed as a fullback right now.
Yeah, he was like an H back in college and like sort of like, he's like he classified as tight end back from my CFB DFS days, like for NC State. So. I think the plan really would be James Conner would be an every down back. I would be totally fine making that assumption just based on how they used him in the preseason. 5,000 on FanDuel and then 4,500 on DraftKings. I should have looked that up while you were talking. Yeah, 4,500 on DraftKings. I think you see his ownership something like 75% or higher in cash. I think it's fine to fade him in GPPs. We'll talk about that in the game-by-game breakdown tomorrow when we will have some more Le'Veon Bell news. But I think that in terms of price and opportunity, even knowing some of these other guys are coming cheap, and we'll talk about some of these other cash game plays, my feeling on Connor would be this is just a fine situation to put it out there and even run the risk that you maybe are playing against a decent run defense or whatever. I think this is the exact opportunity you're looking for.
Yeah, well, I'd say, right, it's tough to argue that, you know, opportunity guys from other positions are safer than running backs, right? Because you can be the opportunity guy wide receiver and not catch the balls thrown your way.
Exactly.
Typically, when you carry the ball as a running back, first of all, your scoring opportunities are going to be higher than any other player on the field because if your team just gets inside the 5-yard line, your chances to score are through the roof versus a wide receiver where it's just kind of a crapshoot. And yeah, I agree with you. I mean, in terms of just strict punt plays, he has to be considered the best one right now. All right. Well, it's good that we got the big news out of the way, I think. I think if you're going into week one and you don't know that James Conner is a viable play, you needed to know that first. So that being said, though, we do have a bunch of other positions that we need to roll through here. Week one, as you pointed out, I think on last week's podcast or the earlier podcast this week, it's a little bit funny, right? Because these sites have released their pricing so early on that it's created an incredible amount of value at running back, at wide receiver, even at tight end. One position that we are not targeting, what you'd call classic value plays, where we're leaning more on the expensive side right now, is at quarterback. You wrote up the cash game plays this week. Like I said, your kind of main emphasis has been on football this season, while we've been buttoning up baseball as well. Talk to me a little bit about why you're leaning in the more expensive direction, because I know at least on DraftKings in the past, we have gotten away with going cheap at quarterback from time to time. Right now, the system is leaning in favor of some of these expensive guys. Can you kind of lay out why and start talking about who you're targeting right now?
Yeah, the why is pretty easy. It's just because you can. I think that's basically it. If I'm just going to do long and short of it, it's because when we have the guys like Connor, we have some extreme wide receiver value. There are, at some point, you have to spend the salary. And I know that's a kind of an easy answer or maybe a silly answer because it's like, duh, of course. As pricing is tighter throughout the season, this kind of idea becomes tougher and tougher. And when it becomes tighter, quarterback is an easier place to save simply because, like, this is why, even if you look at season-long drafts, if, like, you're new to DFS, there's a reason you can usually just wait, or it's almost always correct to wait spend for a quarterback, draft a quarterback, because there's just guys available. Like, a lot of these guys aren't so different from each other on a week-to-week basis when you start accounting for matchup, Ryan Tannehill is not going to be so different than it's not going to be as different as you would think between like Ryan Tannehill and like Alex Smith if you're accounting for matchup. I'm just picking like two sort of random guys where I think most people would agree that Alex Smith is better. But so I guess that's my point, is that at some point, because there's so much value in other spots, if for cash, like I think you just spend for Brady and just call it a day. Now, I will say that usually our system trends toward running quarterbacks because people really just do not so – the layperson does a very, I would say, not great job at identifying just how many points you can get on the ground if you run. We mentioned yesterday, like 40 yards rushing, which is a lot for a quarterback, is just a passing touchdown, by the way these are scored. And if you have Cam Newtons and Deshaun Watsons and Marcus Mariotas of the world that can actually run, you, I think, typically want to and are decent throwers, especially for the first two guys. Well, I guess Cam's not great, but – you want to do that. I think, but this week is probably an exception. I think you just go Brady. He plays Houston. The game has the highest over-under, the highest total of the day by far. New Orleans might be butting up against it. He's just been one of the most consistent quarterbacks on a week-to-week basis throughout the last many years. He's barely misses time. And the running game is kind of in question. Like, Burkhead is still maybe not 100%. Right. Sony Michel is still maybe not 100%. They have James White there. They don't really have a big-time running game. And I just don't – this is the Patriots, but I just think that they're just going to have to pass. And especially if Houston can keep their foot on the gas, like that, they beat them last year. If Houston can keep the foot on the scoring gas, then I think that Brady will just have to throw a lot. Am I crazy? I mean, that's kind of, I gave a long answer to say he just has a very high projection and you just have to spend the money. You have to spend the money somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think one way or the other, New England's going to get a lot of possessions in this game simply because Watson is either going to be lighting it up the way he did last year, moving the ball up and down the field and putting points on the board, to which Brady will have to respond, or he'll just be doing three and outs because he's not quite ready yet, right. In which case, Brady and the Pats, you'd have to think they'll take every opportunity to run up a big week one. That's just kind of been their MO in the past. So, yeah, I think Brady's an excellent play. I also love him here. I think both teams not having an excellent running game really helps him as well, because, like, say it's a little bit rocky. You know, you've mentioned the only concern being kind of a lack of a true number one wide receiver sort of situation here, I guess, outside Kronk. But it's not.
I think Hogan represents that though. Like, I think so.
Well, he's good. I mean, I don't think you wouldn't call him, looking into week one, he's not a classic.
No, you're fair point.
Wide receiver one.
Right? No, fair point. He's He's very good at catching touchdowns, but you're right. But I wonder also how much of that will change going into this game because of just he's one of the guys that Brady, you know, Brady's been in the past has definitely honed in on guys. Like, he has appreciated, now a lot of these times these guys are slot receivers, like Julian Edelman, sure, or whatnot, or James White even coming out of the backfield. But at times that is maybe more the position he's defaulted to. But Brady does strike me as a default quarterback. He's like, if I have something that I like, this is the thing that I will do over and over and over again until you're dead from it. And Hogan, I think, has the possibility to be that. And I agree with you that he's not in like the DeAndre Hopkins, Antonio Brown class of wide receivers, clearly.
Yeah, okay. I think that makes sense then. So outside of Brady then, I mean, I think we agree, especially just given all the value that's just lying around on the board, Brady will probably see a lot of ownership this week. I mean, the safety, the upside, it's all there. If we're not going to go with Brady, let's say for big tournaments, where else can you see us going here? Because, you know, when we're trying to win, if you're trying to win $1 million on FanDuel or DraftKings, probably taking the best known, highest owned receiver or quarterback, unless it's like a definitively amazing matchup, isn't always the best strategy. So who else can we look at here? Is there someone else in the top tier, mid tier, low tier? Where are you thinking?
Yeah, so I think that one thing that I was trying to hone in on cash game plays was known entities, just the situations that are the same basically this season as they were last season for week one at least. Because there's lots of guys, the names, the list is long, of course, of quarterbacks in good spots or with good pedigree, but they all have question marks. And the list, right. We kind of went through it yesterday, but the list is pretty long between guys switching teams, guys come back from injury, whatever. The one guy that doesn't fall into that category for me is Roethlisberger. Again, not a very mobile quarterback, of course, so that doesn't necessarily check that box. But in terms of bringing the band back, even with the Le'Veon Bell thing, like, I think of all the positions, you can basically... Roethlisberger doesn't, in my estimation, lose a ton going from Bell to Connor. There's clearly a downgrade, but it's not like going from Antonio Brown down to, you know, well, their next wide receiver up, you know, like Juju Smith-Schuster. Now,
well, it's not exactly apples to apples too, right? Because, yeah, you lose Bell and you lose his pass catching ability, but you also lose his running ability too, which might shift more opportunities in Roethlisberger's direction.
Yep, and I actually liked Big Ben when I thought Bell was going to be back. I kind of almost like him more, sure, now that there's probably just an opportunity that they're just going to have to throw a little bit more. He has probably the best wide receiver weapons in terms of, like, if you just aggregate their total and what you get from them between Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown. I think that probably is represents something like the best wide receiver duo, or it's close. Like, Diggs Thielen is probably close. Like, they're at least in the conversation of duo. Like, Brown is clearly the best, and then it's just a matter of how good you think Juju is. I think Ben, for the price, it's a slight savings off Brady, and I think his floor is right about there, but I still would probably prefer Brady. So, but it's mostly because the unknowns around guys like Watson, Luck, you know, Cousins, Smith, all these guys that have switched teams, Mahomes, all these guys that have switched teams or are new to the situation, I just don't want to gamble on these guys in week one for cash. Fine to do it in GPPs. We'll talk about that on the game-by-game breakdown. But in terms of just known entities, Roethlisberger really did represent that for me, and I would feel totally fine playing him in cash.
Yeah, I think so too. I think taking the high floor is rarely terribly wrong at quarterback anyway. And the fact that he's been so consistent for so long, and he's one of these quarterbacks that's not you know, returning just such a more questionable situation. I think just, and I think the price is frankly right too. Like, we've seen Roethlisberger be 10% more expensive with basically the same cast of characters, right? So right. I don't see it. I think it's unreasonable. Okay. So outside Roethlisberger, I mean, if we wanted to go cheap, you know, oftentimes for big tournaments, going really cheap allows us to pay up at other positions. And, you know, you mentioned pivoting off, say, James Conner for cash games. You might want to do that and go expensive at running back. If we're going to go expensive elsewhere, it's tough to go expensive at quarterback, too. So is there a cheap guy that we can tack on here as well?
Yeah, I wrote up Mariota. This one, it took me a little more digging to make a case for in this price tier. Because in this price tier, you basically just are taking a risk. So at this point, you're saying to yourself, right, what risk am I willing to take? Am I willing to take a risk on a somewhat known quantity? Is that the risk I want to take, that we just know the risk is already built in? Or is it worth taking the risk on the unknown thing because the upside is higher? So like, if you looked at, you know, Mariota as opposed to Cousins on DraftKings, so they're basically the same price. I think we would all agree Cousins is a better quarterback with a better situation. And how much does the unknown factor into Cousins' situation, right? So like, that I find, and now to be fair, Cousins we do have projected for a little bit higher than Mariota. So I don't think it's, and let's see, Phil Rivers as well. So I did write up Mariota. I easily could have written up Phil Rivers against KC. It became down to just like sort of percentage points. I wrote up Mariota because he did check the running box. I think that his situation is basically the same as last year, except it stands to reason they did get a pretty decent upgrade in terms of overall play calling by bringing on Matt LaFleur, who's like a Kyle Shanahan protege. So they were such a plodding run heavy offense last year and just so slow and just kind of outdated, like not really not taking advantage of the things that Mariota can do well, which is probably, you know, like run pass option stuff, just running more, which is like, that is like one of his big gifts. Yeah. I think, you know, because I can't imagine it's any, at worst, it's a lateral move on offense. And at best, it's a big upgrade in terms of like their scheme and play calling. With a lot of the same guys, like, they, you know, they don't have DeMarco Murray there. They have Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry splitting carries. They get a Miami team who was just totally garbage on defense last season. So I think that's Mariota, and I'm not as definitive. Like, if it was between saving on a receiver somewhere and playing one of the guys that I mentioned before, or like, you know, going for a more expensive receiver and then punting with Mariota, I would much rather take the Brady or Roethlisberger route. And I am very bullish on Mariota going into the season because I just do think, I think he represents a guy that could outperform his projection. And I feel okay because I know that his situation is basically the same with possibly significant improvements.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree. I mean, I think Mariota, he's a guy, it's interesting. I feel like you and I have talked about Mariota off the air for hours and hours and hours because he's a guy that's come up as a cheap option on DraftKings for us in the past. A guy that I can't look away from in this price range, and I wonder where the public and at large will kind of lean here, is Andrew Luck. I mean, the guy's 7,300. Mariota right now on FanDuel is 7,200. Luck is 7,300. So you pay $100 extra dollars. Our system has him for a fraction more scoring than Mariota, but the points per dollar are slightly better on Mariota. What do you think about Luck? I mean, sure, there are definitely there's some risk, right? Like a guy with a phantom shoulder injury that keeps him out weeks and weeks and weeks, longer than many people anticipated, but he's awfully cheap too, right? Like, you know, we're talking $1,500 below his peak pricing, and with basically the same cast around him, is there a case for playing Andrew Luck in these formats, or is it just, should we just get 1 week under our belt? Because I feel like if we get 1 week, the price is going to go up too.
It might, and I'm fine with it. And I thought long and hard about that because our projection on Luck right now represents Luck not at full health. I think it's fine to do that for week one. I don't think that this is a limb that you can step out on and it can easily snap, right? The guy has not played in forever. And so it's been so, I get that at the pedigree's there, the guy, you know, I don't know, has just like sort of like generational talent when he's fully healthy. And the guy just hasn't played in so long. And it was an injury to his throwing shoulder, like, which short of, it's almost, to me, the throwing shoulder injury is like worse than the ACL tear almost, because like an ACL tear, because least the ACL tear, we have long history. We have a good track record of guys just coming back and just being fine from an ACL tear. Like the things that have just the upgrades in medicine at this point in recovery have just, there's been plenty of guys that have come back from these ligament tears and just been fine. This is just like an injury to the throwing shoulder. And I think that look, if he was coming back from ACL tear, I'd have the same thing. Like, we said the same thing for Watson. So I'm not like saying that it wouldn't be, but that's my only concern. He just represents, that is a pretty big unknown. And I'm very bullish on Andrew Luck for the season. Like, I wrote him up. I wrote him and T.Y. Hilton up as, like, possibilities for, like, prop bets going into the season. He's definitely a guy I'll play in GPPs paired with T.Y. 100%. I still like Jack Doyle. So, anyway, this is all to say I'm bullish on Luck, and I'm just fine if he's 7,300 and 8,000 next week and we kind of miss 1 week of it. Because here's the thing. If he had a good week and went up 10%, he probably, and with a good match, I didn't look at who his matchup is being, we'd probably still be getting value on him. Because if we saw, there's no way the price will increase if he's great to a point where he still isn't a value. And I think there's probably more downside than I'm willing to kind of take on. So that's my long answer on Luck.
No, yeah, I think that's a fair answer. I'll have to say, I don't want to speak out of the scope of my expertise here personally. I'm definitely not a Stefania Bell, Will Carroll type, but I injured my shoulder pulling up on a bar stool about 10 years ago, and my shoulder still gives me problems from time to time. Now, granted, I didn't have the same level of medical attention given it to it, which is to say hardly any at all. But yeah, no, I think that's...
But we can agree that your genes and Andrew Luck's genes are like kind of the same though, right? So like, I think that, you know, you guys are probably swimming around the same genetic gene pool in terms of just athletic ability. That's a fair statement, even if maybe if the medical stuff wasn't the same.
Possibly not in terms of athletic ability. I think if you took 100 activities and we competed head-to-head in 100 activities, he would win all the athletic ones. But I think I have a chance in some of the other, like the brain-based ones, like playing Settlers of Catan and stuff like that.
Playing Fortnite. You know, I feel like guys like this, though, if they
said he'd just be better as a matter of course, just because he's more coordinated and think more quickly. But
all right.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer. I don't know if this is a side note, because we got a lot to get going here, but Trevor May made his return to the major leagues this season.
He's been
insane, out of the, like, just striking out more than 13 guys per nine. And many people won't know that in his off season he's just been streaming Fortnite and like hanging out with all these famous Fortnite streamers like Ninja and those guys, and just like kind of holding his own doing that as well. So it's kind of funny. But anyways, moving on to running back, this is another position that you can kind of go in two different directions. I mean, we'll get to wide receiver in a minute, but given the dearth of, first of all, great pay up options at wide receiver right now, and a lot of really excellent kind of fill-in guys that we've seen produce in the past, like I would argue kind of relatively safe punt plays, you wrote up some pretty expensive running backs. But I want to set this up for people so they're not like, oh, nice job by Doug just listing the top overall picks in season-long drafts, that guys that I should play at running back in DFS. But you wrote up some expensive guys. Is it that same sort of situation as to why you wrote up expensive quarterbacks? Is it just that there's so much value elsewhere? Or is it just, you know, a relative lack of good mid-range to cheap running backs that that you decided to go expensive?
Well, so I decided to go expensive here because I even made a note in the article. I said, we're going to get to the cheap guys when we get to wide receivers, because everyone is probably priced 10 to 15% less than they should be. That's a bird's eye view statement, so that's not going to be true maybe on a player-to-player level, but everyone is just priced a little bit cheaper than they should be, and the salary cap didn't change. So when that's the case, you are just going to be able to fit more, quote, expensive guys, because yes, they're expensive, but again, they're not expensive as they should be. So I have Kamara on there. I think that it just represents an opportunity to – I think he's going to be very highly owned. So I don't think he's not going to sneak up on anybody. He checks every single box for what you want from a cash game running back. So those boxes would be, is he going to be on the field for all three downs? It sure looks like it. They cut every other running back they had, except, and they brought in Mike Gillisley really late. The guy's barely practiced. So do they have other options? Not really. Like, can he catch balls? Well, that's what he did the best last season. So it's like, is he going to be on the field for third downs? Of course. Is he going to be on the field? Does he represent their best like running option? Of course. So I think that not having Ingram there, the fact that they were willing to just play very loosey-goosey with the other running backs that they even had on the roster, means that their full plan is to just run Kamara. Because, I mean, it wasn't like their plan was like, we'll just figure out who the next guy, whoever's available at the end of the preseason, we'll bring that guy in and he'll just split carries with Kamara. Like, there's no possibility of that. Even the Saints, who are the all-time worst in disseminating news, in even close to truthful news about what's happening, even they can't like be this, I don't know, meta about this thing. So so Kamara, from that standpoint, is he going to be on the field the whole game? It sure looks like it. We did a study in the offseason about how Vegas lines can help you look at maybe possible running back performance. It's somewhat chicken or the egg, and I get it, because, you know, if you're heavy favorites, it usually is because you run the ball pretty well and are a good offense. And when you get into this kind of -7 and above home favorite, this is just the absolute sweet spot in terms of running back carries. The graph spikes in this area in terms of like how many attempts the running backs get, how many points they score, how many yards they get, every single thing. It's it just looks, for all intents and purposes, like this is the exact place you want to be. They started at -7 favorites. He's now up to -9.5. And no, by the way, there's only like one other game with anything close to this sort of home favorite. You know, I'll get to the game by game tomorrow, but like, I don't know, man. Just go saves anywhere else would be my call here. Like if there's,
well, you're going to have to make this decision though, right? Because you're calling Kamara one of the all time cash game plays basically. And I can't disagree in principle, but right next to him, you have David Johnson, who also has a pretty decent matchup here, is $100 cheaper. And if you're telling me that I have to play James Conner, that means that I'm not going to, like, at least on FanDuel, I'm not going to be able to play both Kamara and Johnson.
No.
Can you give me the case? Because you have the flex now.
The case is the flex, yeah.
Completely slipped my mind when I was looking at that. I started getting scared. Okay.
You have the flex, and it's easier to forget on FanDuel because they just instituted. But that's why it's not a problem at all. Like right now, if you run lineups on our site, this is how you know the pricing is soft. The top lineup on our site right now is Brady, Kamara, Johnson, in that order for your quarterback and running back. And you can look at the wide receivers and not feel too bad about what you're getting there either. One, because it has James Conner in there. And it changes a little. If Bell comes back, this changes a little bit because there is going to be a decision need to be made, I think. But as of right now,
well, James Conner being free, being as cheap as what your kicker would have been last season, is just a lifesaver, right? Because that just lets the rest of the lineup look totally normal. And you get a guy who, it wouldn't be crazy if he scored just as many fantasy points as Kamara Johnson, just because, like, if he happens to get 25 carries, which we you know is in play, anything can happen at that point. So yeah, no, I think I see it then. So do you want to jump into DJ as well then? Because I was kind of pitting them up against each other as though you had to choose. I suppose you don't. Say you're put in the position where you can't play both. Say on DraftKings, right? Because
yes,
on DraftKings right now we don't have both Kamara and David Johnson there. If you had to pick one between them, are you still leaning Kamara, or can a case be made for Johnson too?
The case be made for Johnson, and I'm really leaning Kamara. My little bit concerned with Johnson is the team is way worse. They're just not as good of an offense. Like, you know, the quarterback play is not as good. That's really just it. It's like, is the offense for Kamara is just better? They're projected for more points. Let's say their opportunity is like close to the same or something like that. And I think I would still just choose Kamara over DJ. It's close. I mean, DJ's great, so don't get me wrong about that. I'm encouraged that it's a wrist injury he's coming back from and not a leg injury. So that's why I'm not worried about volume or anything else. I think that at some point you do have to ding DJ just a little bit for the team, just being a worse team and the matchup being worse than what the Saints get against Tampa Bay. I think that's what it really comes down to. So in a vacuum, if I was only able to choose one, and it kind of does look like you might be in that situation on DraftKings because of the pricing, I would definitely just choose Kamara. It's not even.
Is the matchup definitively worse though? Like last year, Washington allowed the very most rushing yards. They allowed more yards per carry than Tampa Bay. Is there some metric that makes Tampa Bay worse, or is it just kind of like? I mean, Tampa Bay was bad. They were bottom 10 rushing defense as well. But I feel like the matchup is at least close, right?
It might be, and if we have to use the tiebreaker, I'm just going to use the tiebreaker to be Vegas, and New Orleans has 7 more points going up on the board, right?
Yeah,
so, I think that, like, yeah, I agree that it's, like, sometimes hard to evaluate the exact, you know, the exact multipliers around defensive metrics and things like that, and we try to play very conservatively early in the start of the season to account for change and things like that, or bad luck or bad schedules, or all the things that can happen in a 16-game NFL season. So if I'm just like, oh, they're equal, the teams are equal, the defenses maybe are equal, and New Orleans just has, I don't know, 33% more points going up on the board according to Vegas. And I think that's just, I'm fine living with that as the tiebreaker. Like, I will often just default to that with all the stupid little caveats. Oh, Vegas is wrong all the time. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Vegas is not necessarily wrong all the time. But, I mean, everyone's going to be
that
wrong all the time.
Right.
You did say you were quoting the stupid person that you were impersonating.
Yes,
I'm not exactly sure who that is. Maybe one of our chatters. If you think that's you in the chat, you can let us know. But, okay, so I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's close enough. Like, in my mind, it's not quite so definitive, but it also just kind of doesn't matter. I think you're going to pick one. I think if you're going for the safety of cash games, you just decide which one you think is higher owned just to lower your own variance. And if you're going for upside in tournaments, you just do the opposite. And then I think you just live with yourself if you're put in a position where you must choose. On DraftKings, you must choose probably, at least based on our projection system right now. We have David Johnson showing up in exactly 0% of our top 50 lineups. And that means that you guessed it, you're going to have to pick someone else for that third spot. Right now, we have Kamara in the top slot. We have James Conner in the flex. And then that next running back slot, it does not have David Johnson. So do you want to talk about who you're thinking we should slot in for that slot on DraftKings?
I wrote up McCaffrey, and I feel so much worse about it with James Conner existing. So I didn't begrudgingly do McCaffrey because I have real concerns about... So I don't have concerns about maybe their the Panthers' intentions on him, which is to like give him the ball as a three-down back at this point. Like it really seemed like they were signaling that in the preseason.
Okay.
I still have concerns about whether he just is a good enough rusher to really handle it, right? Like, he's a great pass catcher. He's a great pass catcher. Don't get me wrong. I think he like led the league in running back targets by far among the group, which is unbelievable for a rookie. And he just like hasn't shown the ability to just run first and second downs for great pieces of yardage. And I think that is a concern. So I put it on there. I'm fine with it on DraftKings because the pass catching is so great that you really make up a lot in the full point PPR. For his price at 6,400, knowing that like that plan is not going... So the pass catching is definitely not going to change. And there just seems to be a commitment on the run. I think I'm fine. Because I think the floor is high enough on the pass catching. And this is the one where I'm like, oof, I could see this one not going great. I don't know. So almost in a lot of situations like this would take a wait and see approach on it to see how effective he was. But I do think we have a chance at buying low on him. I would not mind shifting to Fournette for 700 more. I get that that's 10% increase or whatever it is. I love Fournette this season. I think that he represents a guy that like maybe didn't catch as many balls last year as he's going to this season. And if that's the case, then he is just going to be, it wouldn't shock me for Fournette to end up in like the DJ, Le'Veon Bell, if like fully active Todd Gurley group of guys by the end of the season, just because I just think the opportunity is gonna be there. And I'd get that he's a little more expensive. So
yeah, I mean, he was already there, by the way, in terms of just, if you want to look at strict opportunity, Fournette was already there. Like he was,
oh, yeah,
the guy week in, week out, alongside like Ezekiel Elliott and very few other guys, maybe Le'Veon Bell, who you could count on 20-plus touches per game. And that, for a team that's not that good, is really hard to do. So, yeah, I think Fournette dramatically underpriced on DraftKings right now.
All right, let's roll through some of these wide receivers. I mentioned that having, you know, we can go cheap here at wide receiver, and this is why I feel comfortable putting it in there. Let me get your opinion real quick, just from a bird's eye view, and I can talk about some of the guys that I wrote up. But we have a group of wide receivers that are the expensive guys, the expensive target guys: Brown, Hopkins, Allen, Thomas. I would put Beckham Jr. in there, and I don't know why I said Jr. I just put Beckham in there, and then it's probably a drop off after that. Knowing that the matchups for these guys and what we said about running backs to start, are you comfortable kind of like punting at running backs? I'll go through some of the guys that I chose. But
punting at wide receiver, you're saying?
Yeah, sorry, punting at wide receiver. Like, does it strike you, based on the cases made for the guys above, does it strike you as an okay strategy to just go much cheaper at wide receiver in a week, knowing that we have possibly some just very lock solid, low coefficient of variation guys at the top of the running back chain?
Yeah, well, I think the combination, so like in any given week, I tend to want to lean running back value because I think it is, like if I have to pay down somewhere, I prefer to pay for a guy like James Conner rather than a guy like Keelan Cole, who we'll get to in a minute. I just think that the floor is so much higher on a guy like that, because even if he goes 22 carries for 80 yards or something, like a pretty bad game, you still get the 8 points, whereas wide receivers can utterly no-show you a lot more often than running backs can. That being said, I think the floor on the big-name running backs this week, with Johnson having last season's best possible matchup and Kamara having this increased opportunity when he was already playing these prices, like I think the floor on that is just going to be higher even than some of these high floor wide receivers. I think there are some guys you just like pretty obviously don't have to pay for in my mind, like AJ Green or Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins with Watson being a question mark, not great. I think Brown's still probably a terrific cash game play if you can somehow find a way to afford him, but other than that, I'm comfortable paying down a little bit. But if you had to pick one guy in sort of that $8,000 and up tier, is there a guy that you would play for this week, or do we just have to play all $6,000 wide receivers?
Now, I love Keenan Allen. I think that Keenan Allen at 7,500 on DraftKings, 8,000 on FanDuel, we are, again, if you look at FanDuel, one for our purposes is Brady, Kamara, Johnson, and Allen, and this is with a caveat with James Conner, you are not really sacrificing too much even with that group, which again, just speaks to just the pricing is too soft, right? So like, that's really all it is. Allen, 8,000 there. DraftKings, 7,500. He's in all the lineups as it is. You know, if it came down to like Allen or like DJ, let's say, like we were like, because they maybe that is a position where you could maybe make a decision. Something I was like sort of like stuttering. I think that would be a conversation I'd be willing to have. Like, you're not even needing to have it on FanDuel as far as I'm concerned right now. But Allen, if you look at last year's stats, we've already known this guy, you know, short of injury, which is the problem for all football players at some point usually, but this guy is just a target monster. There's no other way to put it. Like, he was on pace to be it 2 years ago, got hurt, came back, was just it again. He was fifth overall in targets last season, and the only guys ahead of him, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, you have to just assume, you know, maybe quarterback play or age regression at some point is going to happen for him. Jarvis Landry switched teams, so you really can't slot him back in. So now you just like, maybe just bump Allen up over those two guys, and you're looking at the guy with the third guy in the same situation with the third most targets coming back into the season. Now, Hopkins really, really did crush these guys. But actually, yeah, it's funny about Hopkins.
Yeah, but all Hopkins' targets were created equally. Either, exactly. Because right? after Watson went down, he would get those 18 target games with seven catches. So I don't,
right, like his conversion rate in his own right. was completely garbage. Now, again, yeah. he upgrades from Watson. And Allen, the other thing I love about Allen, and this is why I actually think we're still buying low, he was second overall in red zone targets in the NFL last year, with by far the worst conversion rate. Like, if he converts those touchdowns at even a reasonable number compared to his peers, then he is not an $8,000 receiver going into this week. He is priced right up there with Hopkins. It's this fantasy scoring was kept lower because he just didn't score the touchdowns. He scored six touchdowns. Every guy above him on the list had, well, not Fitzgerald, but Landry had 9, Brown had 9, Hopkins had 13. If you add in, because some of these prices are
just giving three more touchdowns, right?
It's exactly.
18 more fantasy points, more than a point more per game. Sure.
Exactly. And that's what a lot of these things are based on, is the fantasy points per game, right? So if you're not scoring touchdowns at a rate commensurate with your peers, you are just going to be cheaper than them for good reason. You score less. But I think that of all the guys that could just spike in terms of just touchdowns, he is just that guy. I feel totally comfortable playing him in cash games. He's got a good matchup here. I'm fine with it. I love that he's a little cheaper than those other guys. Kansas City, they got rid of Peters in the offseason, but they brought in Kendall Fuller in the Alex Smith trade, and Fuller is an excellent slot cover guy, and that is where Allen lines up. So Casey does improve on slot defense in a game where, you know, that's where Allen's going to run a majority of his routes. So that's my only little concern, and I'm still fine on the volume. And again, on DraftKings, if it comes down to it, I would probably prefer the safety of a bigger running back if I could, but I don't know. I hope I made a strong enough case for Allen. I love Allen.
No, I think it's a great case. I mean, and ultimately, too, you know, Kansas City with some personnel changes there still allowed last season the second most yards per attempt in the air. So very, very bad passing defense last season. And one player, you know, you would think can't make up for all of that. So I think Allen still, and regardless, what are San Diego's other options? You know, like, they really just don't have a ton. Or LA, they're LA now. What are LA's other options here? That's so weird.
Yeah, it still confuses me. I still say the wrong thing.
Okay,
yeah.
So moving past Allen, you know, we have a number of guys in this lower price tier that we are looking at right now. In particular, I think what's going to catch a lot of people's attention if you're looking at our optimal cash game lineups for week one is we have some guys on FanDuel in the 5,300 and under tier at wide receiver. Yep. Now, normally, this can be both exciting and terrifying to play guys in this price range. So can you talk to me a little bit about why we're feeling comfortable right now running guys at the absolute bare bottom prices on FanDuel at wide receiver?
Yeah, and we're running a little long, so I'm going to go through these guys pretty quick, and then we'll cut to some of these other situations in the game-by-game breakdown tomorrow. But there is the big thing with wide receiver on both sites is that there's a lot of opportunity that has opened up since this pricing came out. So, and I'm going to go through these. I'll go through three situations that I see as being these kind of things, and then we can break it down a little bit more tomorrow. But the three situations are these. One is we have a San Francisco team that is not priced probably as high as they should be based on a full season numbers from last year, because they did not have Garoppolo as their full-time quarterback up until, you know, for the whole season last year. And that's Goodwin and Pierre Garçon. I think these guys' season-long numbers would look a lot higher. They just definitely would be. I don't even think. They would look a lot better and a lot higher had Garoppolo been under center the entire season instead of, you know, the C.J. Bittard and kind of poo-poo platter they were running out there for a lot of the year, right? So that's Goodwin and Garçon. The problem with Goodwin and Garçon this week is I think they are coming too cheap for what their opportunity is going to be. Oh, also, one more thing with them is this team took a real hit when they lost McKinnon, and now they're going at, they're starting the season at running back with Alfred Morris and Matt Breida. That is that is nothing short of a major downgrade from what they were getting from what was looking to be like a three-down back in McKinnon. So I think the team got worse. They probably are going to have to throw more. They played at a really fast pace last season, so I think the volume for Goodwin and Garçon will make it up. And I recognize that their matchup is bad here against Minnesota, against Xavier Rhodes, and the rest of that secondary. So I think they get a major tick up in volume and overall just efficiency. They get a tick down because of the matchup, and I'm fine meeting them where their price is, Goodwin especially. The second situation is obviously the Jacksonville situation with Marquise Lee going down. Now, they still have Blake Bortles in their center. That's a huge problem. I fully understand that it's Bortles. And Keelan Cole and Dede Westbrook are so damn cheap. They're just basically the minimums the minimums on both sides. And these are just the two wide receivers on the team. Jacksonville, even if they don't throw a lot, and even if their quarterback play is, you know, below average, it's still just too good of an opportunity.
Yeah, you have to get 15 targets out of this, right? Like, it'd be really hard.
Yes.
Just, like Keelan Cole by virtue of playing a 60-minute football game.
Keelan Cole at 4,500, I get it. Like, maybe Dede ends up becoming the guy or whatever, and I'm still fine. Like, Cole was, like, the second overall targeted guy. It wasn't per game. Dede had more because he came in later in the season. But I think that, like, this situation in terms of cheap. And I'm going to throw one more situation in there that I did not get to, which is the Miami one. Devontae Parker is going to be out. And they lost Jarvis Landry. That is a ton of targets lost from last season. Right. Now, the most jettison targets was Jacksonville with Marquise Lee and Hurns and these guys. The second most, that might have even been more, actually, now that I added Parker, because I don't think I added Parker because of the injury. It probably is actually Miami. In terms of losing Jarvis Landry, not having Parker at all, that is just so many targets gone. So guys like Kenny Stills are just in a good spot here. So I didn't add them in the cash one. We'll talk about that tomorrow. So I think the reason is wide receiver, more than any other position, has just opened up opportunity in the preseason or in the offseason that hasn't been fully accounted for. So I think that's why I feel comfortable taking a quote-unquote gamble at wide receiver on the cheaper end.
Okay, great. So the last position that we're going to talk about on this podcast today, I think we'll get to, like, you know, some defensive matchups more in the game-by-game breakdown, is tight end. Tight end tends to be, A, the most boring position in DFS, and B, you know, kind of one of these positions that seems to lend itself very highly to variance. You know, we re-released our NFL ebook, which you should go check out at dfsr.com/ebook. You can download a copy there. And one of the things we noted again this year is that there is the most variance around tight end performance. Guys sometimes get 10 targets, sometimes they get two. Is there anything resembling safety at the tight end position this week, or is it just still kind of a crapshoot?
It's always been the cheapest position to fill on DraftKings, and that almost always makes sense to just try to punt it away with a guy short of just, you know, significant savings elsewhere. I do think there's two guys that I'd be willing to pay. They actually more like in the middle tier. Well, one's in the middle tier, one's in the lower tier. With Delanie Walker, you know, I mentioned Mariota. I think this offense gets an upgrade. Walker was one of the most targeted tight ends in football last season. He just stands to reason that's going to be the case again. They made no real significant improvements in their wide receiver game. I mean, Tywan Taylor. I mean, Tennessee's long on the list of guys, wide receivers that are supposed to be good and just never pan out. I mean, this seems like it's a multi-year thing that's going on with the Titans, that there's just, oh, this is the, it's Eric Decker, or it's Corey Davis, or some guy that's going to be the new wide receiver that's going to be great for the Titans, and yet it kind of just is Walker who gets the catches. He led the team in red zone targets. Great matchup against Miami. It's a little more expensive, 6,100 on FanDuel, 49 on DraftKings, than we typically go. And he, represents a safe, considering the price, about as safe a commodity as you can get a tight end. And if I had to pay a little bit of a premium on it, I think I'd be willing to do it just because there are a lot of question marks. And the other guy I put down there was Jack Doyle. Doyle was the second most targeted guy with the last season that Luck played on the Colts. Not the second most targeted guy overall.
A little
second,
bit of a yikes in football to think about 2016, but yeah, I mean, it is the same guy and it is the same quarterback.
Continued getting targets in the offense last season with Jacoby Brissett, and I think I had it right in front of me how many targets he had last year. I'll look it up 1 second, but yeah, he was fifth overall in tight end targets last season with a significantly worse quarterback. So. Even if like the arm issues and like zip on the ball were a problem for Luck, it strikes me like that's a problem for like T.Y. Hilton more than it is for Doyle, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
If like just in terms of routes run and deep balls and all this other stuff, if you have 80% on your fastball, like Luck might, or 90%, that is going to be that it probably only helps Doyle.
Right, Hilton is a lot more to be affected by that than Doyle is. Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, and we've seen with Luck in the past, like his. You know, desire to lean on guys like Fleener, Dwayne Allen, you know, like when things haven't been going right for Luck, he has leaned on the tight end to a pretty considerable degree. And I think especially if the money works out this way, just paying for Jack Doyle rather than having to invest more money in Delanie Walker, I view them as very, very similar. And I think you can get away with it.
$3,600 on DraftKings is exactly. Very cheap. Because like if you look at Doyle's other, if you look at the other guys in Doyle's range, you get Tyler Eifert. I mean, he's cheap. And the guy's just injured every single day.
Hashtag cheap for a reason. Yeah.
Safarian Jenkins is moving into a new situation in Jacksonville, so I think I'd prefer $400 more for Doyle. You get David Njoku, where that's just Cleveland. Who knows? New quarterback George Kittle coming back from injury. So this, I mean, you get down to Ryan Griffin. He's taking over a new situation. Sort of. I don't know. I think I'd probably prefer Doyle of that group that I just mentioned. If I was going to go even more punt, I'd go maybe Griffin at $2,800 and just roll the dice and just spend up at another position because. Look, it's just hard to get. It's hard to get crazy upside on tight end, short of the touchdown. It's such a volatile position. I think that is a situation where finding anyone cheap enough and just making a case for it is probably fine. All right, we ran a little long. We're gonna get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com/NFL right now gets you that free week-long trial to our projection system, powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. We will be back again tomorrow doing a full game-by-game breakdown of what you can look at. I have a lot of thoughts here on some of these other, what I think are going to be under-owned guys, especially at running back.
Dude, I can't wait.
Yeah, so I've really talked myself GPP-wise into three guys that I think have really big upside. So go check that
teaser.
Out tomorrow. I'll be also going up as some premium content as well. So I'll try to hold back a little bit on the podcast. And if you want to go sign up, you'll be able to read it under our premium content section. All right, buddy. Talk to you again tomorrow when we do a full game-by-game breakdown of week 1 for FanDuel and DraftKings.
Later, dude.